It's all very intriguing, but I'm not clear yet what you want me to do in this matter, Mr. Mason. Can't you make it more definite?
Perhaps this will make it more definite, Mr. Holmes.
Perhaps it will.
Good Lord.
A charred fragment of bone. Where did you get it?
There's a central heating furnace in the cellar beneath Lady Beatrice's room. Harvey, he's one of the stable lads, has charge of it. He found the bone when he was raking the cinders this morning. He didn't like the look of it.
Nor do I. What do you make of it, Watson?
It's the upper condyle of a human femur.
Exactly what I thought. These are deep waters, Mr. Mason. And rather murky.
Shoscombe Old Place by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell. With Clive Medicine as Sherlock Holmes and Michael Williams as Dr. John Watson. And featuring Nicholas Leprevo as John Mason and Donald Pickering as Sir Robert Norbiton. Shoscombe Old Place.
It's glue, Watson.
Glue?
Yes, unquestionably. Glue. Well, take a look through the microscope.
I don't understand what you're talking about.
Well, see for yourself. Ah. Have a look at the scattered objects in the field.
You mean the black lines and the grey bits and the blobby things?
Blobby things? The black lines are threads from a tweed coat. The irregular grey masses are dust. There are epithelial scales on the left.
Epithelial?
Epithelial.
Epithelium. The cell tissue which invests the outer surface of the body and the mucous membranes connected with it.
Or in plain English, dandruff. And the brown blobs, as you call them, are glue.
I'm happy to take your word for it. Is there actually a point to any of this, Holmes?
It's a very fine demonstration. You recall the St. Pancras case.
The policeman who was shot down outside the buffet on platform one.
A cap was found beside his body. The man who was accused of the murder has persistently denied that it was his. But he's a picture maker and probably uses glue every day. The man's as good as hanged.
Is this one of your cases, Holmes?
Oh, goodness, no, no. Merivale of the Yard asked me to look into it. Since I ran down that coiner by the zinc and copper filings and the seam of his cuff, they've come to realise the importance of the microscope. Yes, it's a fascinating aid to detection.
Oh, yes.
What time is it, Watson?
A 11:15.
Yes, I'm expecting a client, but he's overdue. I believe, Watson, that you know something of racing.
I ought to. I'd pay for it with about half my war-wound pension.
I knew I could rely on you. You shall be my handy guide to the turf.
I don't follow you.
Does the name Sir Robert Norbiton mean anything to you?
I should say it does. He lives at Shoscombe Old Place.
You've been there?
My summer quarters were down there once.
Summer quarters?
When I was a medical student.
Tell me about Sir Robert Norbiton. What manner of man is he?
He nearly came within your province once.
Within my province? How was that?
There was a most unsavoury type, Sam Brewer.
The moneylender, the one who has premises in Curzon Street.
That's the fella. It happened on Newmarket Heath. Norbiton was already pretty deep in, but he asked for an extension of credit. Brewer refused him, point blank. And he wasn't exactly discreet about it either. Norbiton saw red and took a horsewhip to him. Brewer was lucky to get away with his life.
What a remarkable character. Does he often indulge himself in that fashion?
He has the name of being a very dangerous man. He's just about the most daredevil rider in England. Second in the Grand National a few years back.
Yes, I remember it. The horse was, what was his name? Patroclus.
That's it.
Yeah.
He's one of those men who's been born out of his time. He should have been a buck in the days of the Regency. A boxer, an athlete, plunger on the turf, a lover of fair ladies. And, by all accounts, so far down Queer Street that he may never find his way back again.
Capital, Watson. A perfect thumbnail sketch. I already seem to know the man. Now, can you give me some idea of Shoscombe Old Place?
No, I can't tell you about the house. It's supposed to go back centuries. But for the past 20 years, it's been the home of the Shoscombe Stud. The training quarters are there, too.
And the head trainer is John Mason.
How do you know that?
There's nothing surprising about my naming it, Watson. I happen to have received a letter from him. But tell me more about Shoscombe. I seem to have struck a rich vein.
There are the Shoscombe Spaniels, of course. You hear of them at every dog show.
No.
They're the most exclusive breed in England, and the special pride of the lady of Shoscombe Old Place.
Sir Robert Norbiton's wife, I presume?
Good Lord, no. Sir Robert has never married. Just as well, I should think, considering his prospects and his reputation. He lives with his widowed sister, Lady Beatrice Falder.
You mean that she lives with him?
No. That's not what I meant at all. The house belonged to her late husband, Sir James Falder. Her brother has no claims on it at all. His sister has only a life interest in the estate, and it reverts to her husband's brother at her death. Meantime, she draws the rents every year.
Ah, and Brother Robert, I suppose, spends said rents.
That's about the size of it. He's a devil of a fellow. I must lead her a most uneasy life. Yet I have heard that she's devoted to him.
And to the Shoscombe Spaniels.
And to the Spaniels, yes. But what is the trouble at Shoscombe?
Here, I expect, is the man who will enlighten us. Mr. John Mason.
The same. Mr. Holmes.
I'll kindly take a seat, Mr. Mason.
Thank you.
This is my friend and colleague, Dr. Watson.
Your servant, Doctor.
Mr. Mason.
You received my note, Mr. Holmes.
Yes, I received it, but it explained nothing.
It was too delicate a situation to put the details down on paper. Rather too complicated. I could only talk about it face to face.
So here we are, Mr. Mason, at your disposal. Pray proceed.
Very well, Mr. Holmes. First of all, I think that my employer, Sir Robert, has gone mad.
This is Baker Street, not Harley Street.
What makes you say so?
Well, sir, when a man does one queer thing, or two queer things, there may be a meaning to it. But when everything he does comes into that category, then you begin to wonder. I believe Shoscombe Prince and the Derby have turned his brain.
Shoscombe Prince is a colt you're running?
The best in England, Doctor. I should know if anyone does. I've had my eye on him since he first got up on his legs. Now, I'll be plain with you, for I know you're a gentleman of honour, and it won't go beyond this room.
That goes without saying, Mr. Mason.
Yes. Thank you, Doctor. Sir Robert has got to win the Derby. He's up to his neck in trouble, and it's his last chance. Everything he could raise or borrow, he's put on Shoscombe Prince. And at fine odds, too. Oh, you can get 40s now, but it was nearer the 100 when he began to back him.
But how is that when you say that the horse is so good?
You know, the public doesn't know how good he is.
Ah.
Sir Robert has been too clever for the touts. He's been taking the Prince's half-brother out for spins round the park. You can't tell them apart. But there are two lengths and a furlong between them when it comes to a gallop.
Mm-hmm. Sir Robert evidently knows what he's about.
He thinks of nothing but the horse and the race. His whole life is on it. He's holding off the money lenders till then. If the Prince fails him, he's finished.
That seems rather a desperate gamble. It's perfectly rational. So where does the madness come in?
Why, Mr. Holmes, you only have to look at him. I don't believe it. He's had a wink of sleep this past month. He's down at the stable at all hours, day and night. His eyes are wild, staring out of his head. And then there's his conduct towards Lady Beatrice.
Ah, and what is that?
Sir Robert and his sister always used to be the best of friends, Mr. Holmes. They had the same tastes, and she loved the horses as much as he did. Every day at the same hour, she'd drive down to see them. And above all, she loved the Prince. And he would prick up his ears as soon as he heard the wheels on the gravel, and he'd trot out each morning to her carriage to get his lump of sugar. But that's all over now.
Why?
Well, she suddenly seems to have lost all interest in the horses. For a week now, she has driven past the stables with never so much as a good morning.
You think there's been a quarrel?
I'm certain of it, and a bitter, savage, spiteful quarrel at that. Why else should he give away her pet spaniel that she loved as if it were a child?
He gave it away?
Only a few days ago, Sir Robert gave it to old Josiah Barnes that keeps the Green Dragon.
Where is this inn?
It's 3 miles off at Grendel.
That certainly does seem very strange.
How's Lady Beatrice taken it? Did she seem distressed?
She's scarcely seen about the house at all now. And Sir Robert never goes near her. With her weak heart and her dropsy, she could never go far without him, and he used to spend 2 hours every evening in her room. And well he might, for she's been a rare good friend to him.
Mm. And that's all over now?
Yes, Doctor. She's taken it badly. She's brooding and sulking. She's drinking like a fish.
Did she drink before the estrangement?
Well, she was used to take her glass, but now it's often a whole bottle of an evening.
Scarcely advisable in her condition.
Now, you're certain of this?
Stevens, the butler, told me. It's all changed, gentlemen, and there's something damn rotten about it.
Hmm. Tell me, Mr. Mason, who keeps her ladyship company?
Well, there's her maid, Carrie Evans. She's been with her 5 years and more.
And is no doubt devoted to her mistress.
Well, she's devoted enough, but I won't say to whom.
What on earth do you mean by that?
I can't tell tales out of school, Doctor.
Yes, we quite understand, Mr. Mason. Of course, the situation's clear enough. From Dr. Watson's description of Sir Robert, I can realize that no woman is safe from him. And do you think the quarrel between brother and sister may lie there?
Well, it might do, so far as it goes.
So far as it goes?
It doesn't account for Sir Robert going off to the old crypt in the middle of the night. Nor does it help to explain who the man is that he meets there.
Ah. Tell us all about the old crypt.
Well, you'll not get anyone to go there after twilight. It's a godforsaken place and known to be haunted.
The crypt is part of Shoscombe Old Place, I take it?
No, sir. It's about half a mile from the house. It was the old family burial chapel. All the folders have been laid to rest there for centuries. It's a ruin now and stands all alone in a park. And under the chapel, there's a crypt. Some say it goes back to Saxon times. It's a dark, damp, creepy place, even by daylight.
And no one dares venture there after dark?
There's a story that one of the ancestors of Lady Beatrice's late husband, they call him the Black Folder, walks every night of the dark of the moon.
But this Black Folder holds no terrors for Sir Robert, I take it.
No, Mr. Holmes. It would take more than that to frighten him.
And what of this man he meets there by night?
Well, Stevens the butler, who first suspected something was up just a few nights ago, he came over to the stables the following morning to tell me about it.
It must have been nearly midnight. It was raining hard, as can scarcely have escaped your notice, Mr. Mason. I saw him go out by the side door beneath the North Tower.
Well, that's his own affair, surely. Perhaps he just slipped out to meet some fancy woman.
In the old crypt. Mind you, some people do have very peculiar tastes.
How can you be sure he was going to the old crypt?
Sir Robert keeps a pair of field glasses by the library window. Well, I could follow the course of his lantern along the side of the walled garden and into the park. He must have given some kind of signal, for there was an answering lantern flash from by the ruined chapel.
What the devil can he be doing there?
I can't imagine, Mr. Mason, but I mean to find out, and I want you to help me.
How do you mean?
Come up to the house this evening. We'll have a bite to eat, and I'll keep a wary eye on Sir Robert. If he sets off one of his midnight rambles again, I want you to help me find out what he's up to.
I had no wish to go, Mr. Holmes, but I didn't see how I could well refuse. We hid in the bushes, quaking like two bunny rabbits, and watched Sir Robert meet the man by the ruined chapel.
And did he catch sight of the fellow's face?
Oh, we could see him quite clearly in the moonlight. It was no one I knew. Haggard, yellow face, mean dog, I should say.
And what could they have been doing in the crypt?
As to that, Doctor, Stevens and I took a look round there yesterday morning. Sir Robert had gone up to London for the day.
Hardly a pleasant place, is it, Mr. Mason? I never did care for this kind of thing.
Can't say I want to linger. Oh, nothing seems to have been disturbed.
What about that piece of board in the corner?
Oh, nothing much, I fancy.
Oh dear, how very nasty.
It's part of a human skull. A few bits of bone.
You informed the police, I suppose.
Well, sir, I thought it would hardly interest them. The bones may well have been 500 years old. They could have just fallen out of one of the ancient coffins. But I'm sure Mr. Palfreyman would never just stow them away in a corner like that.
And who is Mr. Palfreyman?
He's one of the vergers at the church, sir. The chapel is his particular responsibility.
Ah, I see. Now, you say Sir Robert was away yesterday.
What?
Has he returned?
We expect him back today.
And when was it he gave away his sister's dog?
It was just a week ago today. The creature was howling outside the old well house, and Sir Robert was in one of his tantrums that morning. He caught it up, and I thought he would have killed it. But he gave it to Sandy Bain, the jockey, and told him to take the dog to old Barnes at the Green Dragon, for he never wished to see it again.
Yes, that's all very intriguing. I'm not clear yet what you want me to do in this matter, Mr. Mason. Can't you make it more, more definite?
Perhaps this will make it more definite, Mr. Holmes.
Yes, perhaps it will.
Good Lord.
A charred fragment of bone. Where did you get it?
There is a central heating furnace in the cellar underneath Lady Beatrice's room. It's been off for some time, but Sir Robert complained of the cold and had it on again. Harvey, he's one of the stable lads, has charge of it. He found the bone when he was raking the cinders this morning. He didn't like the look of it.
Oh, nor do I. What do you make of it, Watson?
It's the upper condyle of a human femur.
Exactly what I thought. Yeah. When does the lad tend to the furnace?
He makes it up every morning, leaves it.
Then anyone could go there during the night.
That's correct.
Can you enter it from outside?
There's one door from the outside. There's another which leads up by a stair to the passage by Lady Beatrice's room.
Yes, these are deep waters, Mr. Mason. Deep and rather murky. Now, you say that Sir Robert was not at home last night.
No, sir.
No. Then whoever was burning bones, it was not he.
That would seem to be the case.
I think we might take a look into this, Watson. We might perhaps make the Green Dragon our headquarters.
And keep an eye on her ladyship's spaniel.
Is there good fishing in that part of Berkshire?
Well, sir, I've heard there are trout in the mill stream. There's pike in the Hall Lake.
Well, that's good enough. Well, Watson and I are famous fishermen. Are we not, Watson?
Complete anglers, Holmes.
It might be best if we don't see each other, Mr. Mason. But a note will reach us, and no doubt I could find you if I need to. You should address us in future at the Green Dragon. We should reach there tonight.
Get down. Get down, Jason.
I'm sorry, gentlemen. I don't know what's come over him.
You've got our telegram, I take it.
Oh, yes, sir. I'll put you in the two rooms at the back, overlooking the garden.
Get down. What's the matter with you?
I'll get the boy to take your bags up and your fishing tackle. And there's no mistaking what you've come here for, sir.
A famous place for trout, I believe. That's what we've heard.
Well, not exactly here, sir. You'd best try the Verret.
The Verret?
It's about 3 miles out on the north side of the village, sir. You'll be bound to find trout there.
What about the Hall Lake and the chance of a pike?
That would never do, sir. You might happen to find yourself in the lake before you were through.
Well, how is that, Mr. Barnes?
Well, it's Sir Robert, sir. He's terribly jealous of touts.
Do he look like touts?
Oh, goodness, no, gentlemen. But Sir Robert is mighty suspicious of any stranger who comes within these parts. The Hall Lake's not a quarter of a mile from his training quarters. If he sees you there, he'll be after you, sure as fate. Ain't taking no chances, Sir Robert ain't.
Who is this, Sir Robert?
Sir Robert Norbiton. He has a horse centred for the Derby.
And he fancies his chances, I take it.
Oh, yes, sir. We've all of us put our money on the horse, and Sir Robert's backed him with everything he possesses. I suppose you ain't by any chance on the turf yourself, sir?
Good Lord, no. Just two weary Londoners with the need to put some good Berkshire air into their foggy lungs.
Well, you're in the right place for that. There's a deal of it lying about. But mind what I've told you about Sir Robert. He's a sort that strikes first and speaks afterwards.
You think we're likely to come across him?
Well, not for a day or so, sir. He's gone up to London. But I don't want no trouble if you two go straying about the park and he finds out that you've been putting up here. Just to keep clear of the park, if you please, gentlemen.
You need not concern yourself about that, Mr. Barnes. We certainly shall.
By the way, that was the most beautiful spaniel that made such a fuss when we arrived. Was it bred locally?
I should say it was. It was Sir Robert himself who gave it to me. That's why I have to keep it on a lead. It would be off back to the Hall in a jiffy if I gave it its head.
Would it indeed?
Well, if you'll forgive me, gentlemen, I mustn't stay here gossiping. Just let me know if there's anything you want. As I say, the Verret up by Alt's End is the place to take a trout or two.
We'll give it a try, Mr. Barnes. Thanks for your advice.
Well, if there's anything you require, gentlemen, just ring the bell.
Thank you, Mr. Barnes. We're getting some cards in our hand, Watson. That's not an easy one to play, but we may see our way in a day or two. And since Sir Robert's still in London, we might perhaps enter the sacred domain without fear of bodily assault. There are one or two points on which I'd like reassurance.
You have a theory, Holmes?
No, it's too soon for anything so substantial. But of this, I am sure. Something happened a week ago which has cut deep into the heart of the Shoscombe household.
And what do you suppose that could be?
Oh, we can only guess at it from its effects. Yeah, they seem to be of a curiously mixed character, but that should help us. Yeah, it's only the colourless, uneventful case which is hopeless.
I don't quite follow you. What effects do you mean?
Consider the data, Watson. Mm. Sir Robert no longer visits his invalid sister. He gives away her favourite dog to the innkeeper. Her dog, Watson. Does that suggest nothing to you?
Nothing, but a brother's spite.
Well, it might be so. Or, there is an alternative.
What alternative?
Let's continue our review of the situation from the time that the quarrel began.
We don't know that there was a quarrel.
Well, for the sake of argument, I suppose that there was. The lady keeps to her room, alters her habits, is not seen, save when she drives out in her carriage, refuses to stop at the stables to greet her favourite horse, and apparently takes to drink. Yes, that covers the case, does it not?
Save for the business in the crypt.
Well, that's another line of thought. There are two, and I beg you, do not entangle them.
No.
Now, line A, which concerns Lady Beatrice, has a vaguely sinister flavour, has it not?
I can make nothing of it.
Can you not? Well, then, let us take up line B, which concerns Sir Robert. Now, he's determined to win the Derby. He's in the hands of the moneylenders and may at any moment be sold up and his racing stable seized by his creditors. He's a daring and desperate man. He derives all his income from his sister. His sister's maid is his willing tool. Huh? So far we seem to be on fairly secure ground, do we not?
But the crypt.
Ah, yes, the crypt. Let us suppose it's merely a scandalous supposition, a hypothesis put forward for argument's sake, that Sir Robert has done away with his sister.
But, my dear Holmes, that is out of the question.
Very possibly, Watson.
Sir Robert is a man of honourable stock.
But you do occasionally find a carrion crow among the eagles. Let's for a moment argue upon this supposition. He couldn't fly the country until he'd realised his fortune, and that fortune could only be realised by winning the Derby with Shoscombe Prince. Therefore, he still has to stand his ground.
But how does he do that?
Well, to begin with, he'd have to dispose of the body of his victim, and he'd also have to find a substitute who would impersonate her. Well, with a maid as his confidant, that would not be impossible. His sister's body might be conveyed to the crypt, which is a place of evil reputation and seldom visited, and it might be secretly destroyed at night in the furnace, leaving behind it such evidence as we've already seen. Eh? What do you say to that, Watson?
Well, it is all possible, I suppose, if you grant the original monstrous supposition.
Yeah. I think that there's a small experiment we may try tomorrow. Might throw some light on the matter. First of all, we need some good reason why we cannot go fishing. Something that we've forgotten that could rule out the whole day.
We could have forgotten our spoon bait, perhaps.
A spoon bait, capital. And I think that I'll propose to Mr. Josiah Barnes that we take his highly bred black spaniel for a walk in the direction of Shoscombe Old Park. I can't say I care very much for the heraldic griffins on the gate.
Too ostentatious by half.
We may trust the bootboy at the inn. It's by this gate that Lady Beatrice takes her midday drive in her open barouche.
It's nearly 12 now.
The carriage will have to slow down while the gates are opened. When it comes through and before it gathers speed again, I want you, Watson, to stop the coachman with some question or other.
I think that might be arranged. That must be them now. What will you be doing?
Never mind about me. I'll stand behind this holly bush with the dog and see what I can see.
Very well.
Here they are. Lady Beatrice, smothered in shawls with a veil over her face, and a girl who looks no better than she should be by her side. The maid, I presume. The man's coming out to open the gates. Off you go, Watson.
Good day, your ladyship. I say, coachman. I say. Can you tell me if Sir Robert is at Shoscombe Old Place?
Gently now, boy, gently. Now then, go. Go to your mistress.
Get it away! Get it away! Get it off me! Drive on, man! Drive on! Come here, boy! Come here!
There. Good boy. You thought it was your mistress, didn't you? Turned out to be a stranger.
Well then, are you satisfied?
Dogs don't make mistakes.
But it was a man's voice.
Exactly, Watson. We've added one card to our hand, but it needs careful playing all the same.
So, how should we proceed?
Well, first, we shall take this highly perceptive creature back to the Green Dragon, and then we shall miraculously discover that we've brought our bait after all.
But why should we want to do that?
Because I've arranged to meet our good friend Mr. Mason by the millstream.
Mr.
No, 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 no. If you throw your line like that, you'll put the fear of God into every fish for half a mile.
Do I have to remind you that we're not here to fish?
Since we are here, we may as well try to keep up a decent appearance. Cast your line lightly, Holmes, lightly.
Oh, very well.
Lightly, I said.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Ah, good evening, Mr. Mason.
I got your note, Mr. Holmes. I came as quickly as I could.
Has Sir Robert returned?
Not yet, but I've received word that he's expected tonight.
Yeah, and there's no time to be lost. Let's get into the crypt without delay. Yeah, will you take us there?
I can't afford to do that, Mr. Holmes. The moment he returns home, he'll want to see me to get the latest news about Shoscombe Prince.
It won't take too long for us to root about the place on our own. Is there someone who knows the crypt well?
Well, there's Mr. Palfreyman, the verger.
But can he be trusted not to tell Sir Robert?
If you care to make it worth his while, Doctor, his duties here have given him a taste for things spiritual.
Whiskey?
Gin, I believe. But what am I to say your purpose is? Do I tell him who you are?
Inform him that Mr. Podmore and Dr. Gurney from the Society for Psychical Research have come to investigate the legend of the Black Folder and wish to examine his grave. That should give us sufficient cover, I think.
Have a care, gentlemen. The stair is steep, and the treads are worn away.
The place smells vilely.
The dead don't smell sweet. There are 9 centuries of them in this place. But you gentlemen must be accustomed to this kind of thing.
Every place seems to have its own aura. I feel that we're in the presence of some mysterious evil.
Coffins of lead, coffins of stone, coffins of wood, all piled up on top of one another, as if there was so much lumber.
Who can tell what strange causes and effects there may be beyond the veil? Kindly, be our guide to this place, Mr. Palfreyman. Who is buried here?
Oh, I only wish I could tell you, Mr. Podmore. I know the recent ones, of course, those from the 16th century onwards. They're all the wooden coffins stacked over there. The last Lord Calder, Lady Beatrice's husband, is the one on top.
And the coffins of stone?
Oh, some of them are said to go back before the Conquest. But they contain nothing more than dust. Dust and a few scraps of bone.
Quite, quite. And the lead coffins here?
Oh, they're mostly from medieval times.
And what can you tell me about the coffin there? The one that stands beside the stair?
Oh, my God. May the Lord save us.
What's the matter, man?
Well, it's never stood there before. Well, I stake my life on it. But it can't have moved itself. What is happening in this place?
That is precisely what Dr. Gurney and I are here to investigate. Now, Mr. Palfreyman, it would be as well, I think, if you were to leave us.
Oh, if that's what you wish, sir.
The test that we have to carry out will only be hampered by the presence of anyone not accustomed to our methods.
But you will close the vault when you leave?
Rest assured, Mr. Palfreyman.
And I'll leave you to it, gentlemen.
Thank you for all your help, Mr. Palfreyman.
A pleasure, gentlemen. A pleasure.
Just make certain that he's really going away, Watson. There's a good fellow.
Yes. He's walking off quite briskly. Probably wants to get back to the bottle of gin we gave him.
Now then, it's time to lay the ghosts of Shoscombe Chapel. Let's take a closer look at the coffin by the stairs.
Seemed to give Mr. Palfreyman quite a fright.
As it should have done. Look closely, Watson, at the edges of the coffin lid. Someone's cut along the whole line of it. It's only secured by these 2 clamps. That should be an easy matter to open it up. You have the jimmy.
In my pocket. Here.
Yes, now then. Yes, excellent.
Now, help me up with the lid.
Good Lord.
Who the devil are you? What do you think you're doing? What the hell are you doing on my property, do you hear me? Who are you?
Sir Robert Norbiton, I believe. I have a question to ask you. Who is this within the coffin? What is this body doing here?
How came you to know of this? What business is it of yours?
My name is Sherlock Holmes. Possibly it's familiar to you. In any case, my business is that of every other good citizen to uphold the law. It seems to me that you have much to answer for.
Before God, Mr. Holmes, I swear to you that it is not as it seems. Appearances are against me, I admit. but I could act no otherwise.
I should be happy to think so, but I fear your explanations must be for the police.
Well, if it must be, it must be. Come up to the house with me and you can judge for yourself how the matter stands.
So, what do you suppose Sir Robert means to do now?
To present us with a justification of his strange conduct, Watson. Mm. What else?
Do you believe that he murdered his sister? That was Lady Beatrice in the coffin, I take it.
Oh, most certainly. As for his guilt, I prefer to reserve my judgment till I've heard what he has to say. But mark my words, Sir Robert is a desperate man. He's prepared to take any course that will save him. And I suspect that he would not stop short of murder.
I refuse to be dragged into this. It has nothing to do with me.
If you know what's good for you, you'll do as Sir Robert says.
For God's sake, keep quiet, both of you, until I've had my say.
Who are these people, Sir Robert? And what have they to do with the case?
They are Mr. and Mrs. Norlett. Mrs. Norlett, under her maiden name of Evans, has for some years been my sister's confidential maid.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
I have decided that my best, indeed my only course, is to explain the true position to you, Mr. Holmes. And these are the only two people on earth who can substantiate what I say.
I had nothing to do with it. It wasn't my idea.
Will you hold your tongue?
I will take all the responsibility upon myself, Norlett. And you have nothing to fear.
You've left it a bit late to tell me that.
You've gone pretty deeply into my affairs, Mr. Holmes, or I should have not found you where I did. Now, how the devil you came to be there, I cannot imagine.
You obviously know very little of my colleague's reputation, Sir Robert.
I know that you're running a dark horse for the Derby, Sir Robert, and that you've staked everything upon it.
I've staked my life upon it, Mr. Holmes. If I win, all is easy.
And if you lose?
I dare not think of it. I cannot think of it.
We understand all that very well, Sir Robert.
I am dependent upon my sister Lady Beatrice for everything. For the estate, for the horses, for the very clothes on my back. But you must understand that her interest in the estate and in the Falder fortune is for her lifetime only.
For her own lifetime, yes.
It has always been my greatest fear that if my sister were to die, my creditors would be onto the estate like a flock of vultures. Everything would be seized on, my stables, my horses, everything. Well, Mr. Holmes, my sister did die just a week ago.
And you told no one?
What could I do? I was faced with absolute ruin. If I could only stave things off for 3 weeks, everything would be well. My sister's maid's husband, this man here, is an actor.
I told you, I won't be dragged into this.
It came into our heads.
I had nothing whatever to do with it. It wasn't my idea.
It came into my head that he could, for that short period, impersonate my sister. It was but a case of appearing daily in the carriage.
No one else ever saw her, you see, except for me.
What was the cause of your sister's death, Sir Robert?
She died of dropsy, Dr. Watson. She'd been suffering from it for years.
That'll be a matter for the coroner to decide. So what did you do?
The body could not remain here at Shoscombe. On the first night, Norlett and I carried it into the old well house, which is now never used.
He forced me into it. I had no wish to be party to such a thing.
Unfortunately, her pet spaniel refused to leave her side and wailed so piteously that it was essential to get rid of it as quickly as possible.
And so you gave it to the landlord of the Green Dragon.
There seems to be precious little that you two haven't discovered. After I disposed of the dog, we carried the body by night to the old Falder crypt. There was no indignity or irreverence. I do not feel that I have wronged the dead.
Your conduct seems to me to be inexcusable, Sir Robert.
It's easy to preach, Mr. Holmes.
You shovel your poor sister away in a stinking vault without ceremony.
It is still consecrated ground, Doctor, and it seemed no dishonor to give her a temporary resting place in the coffin of one of her husband's ancestors.
May I say something?
Yes, Mrs. Norlett.
I am certain that Lady Beatrice would have borne Sir Robert no ill will for what he has done. She would not have wished to see shame and ruin fall upon him. I know that she would have understood.
Thank you, Carrie.
Continue your story, Sir Robert.
We opened up one of the coffins and removed the contents.
The remains of Ralph de Falder, I believe.
It did not seem to me to matter much who it was. We placed my sister in the coffin, as you discovered. As to the old relics which we had taken out, Norlett and I removed them, and he burned them in the furnace beneath my sister's room.
I was only doing what he told me to, Mr. Holmes.
And he promised to pay you handsomely, I have no doubt. But there is one flaw in your narrative, Sir Robert. Your bets on the race, and therefore your hopes for the future, would have held good even if your creditors had seized the estate.
No, Mr. Holmes. The horse itself would be part of the estate. Shoscombe Prince would go along with everything else. What do my creditors care for my bets? As likely as not, they would not run the horse at all. My chief creditor is, unhappily, my most bitter enemy. A rascally fellow, Sam Brewer.
The man you took a horsewhip to on Newmarket Heath.
The very same, Doctor. Mm. Do you suppose that he would try to save me?
Well, Sir Robert, this matter must, of course, be referred to the police. It was my duty to bring the facts to light. And there I must leave it.
But surely, Mr. Holmes, you must understand
that... the morality or decency of your own conduct. It's not for me to express an opinion.
But if news of this should get about before the Derby, I shall be ruined.
Surely, Mr. Holmes, you must see that the least hint of a scandal of this kind would be certain to make Sir Robert's creditors foreclose on him. Nothing can harm Lady Beatrice now. And the poor wretch who was shoveled out of his grave has been dead for 500 years. Can you not hold your hand until after the race?
The law must take its course, Mrs. Norlett. But it would give me no satisfaction to see Sir Robert ruined. My report on these strange proceedings will fall on the Commissioner's desk the day after the Derby. But have a care, Sir Robert. I am not unknown to the police. The least word from me may influence the outcome for good or ill.
I've learnt my lesson, Mr. Holmes, and I am very grateful. You have been most understanding.
Then, as it's nearly midnight, I think, Watson, that we'll make our way back to our humble lodging.
Mm.
The outcome rests in the hands of fortune, Sir Robert.
Fast brick of lavender, sir.
No, no, thank you.
It'll bring you good luck, sir. Never fails.
No, no.
You'll regret it if you don't. Who knows what nasty fate might catch up with you. Go on, sir. Only a penny.
Oh, very well. Here.
Let me pin it to your coat. May fortune smile upon you, sir.
Dr. Watson! Ah! Dr. Watson!
Mr. Mason!
Come to see the case through to the end, eh?
Nothing of the kind. I'll have you know, Mr. Mason, that I've attended every derby for the last 10 years.
Is Mr. Holmes here?
No. It seems he had to attend a highly confidential meeting with the Turkish ambassador. What are you doing out here? Shouldn't you be with Shoscombe Prince?
Oh, there's no need for me to worry, Doctor. Not with Sir Robert around. You won't let him out of his sight for 10 seconds. He's put everything he possesses on that horse, and a good deal that he doesn't.
He must be a very anxious man.
Well, if he is, he isn't letting it show. He's cool as a cucumber, he is. Ever since you and Mr. Holmes had your little encounter with him in the crypt, he's been a changed man. Courteous, considerate.
He has good reason to be. He was lucky to be let off the hook. Mind you, if that young woman hadn't put in a word for him...
Yeah, well, what woman?
Mrs. Norlett.
Mrs. Norlett? Oh, so that's the game now, is it?
I don't follow you.
Well, I suppose he thinks that by passing her off as that fellow's wife, no one will raise an eyebrow at her staying on at Shoscombe Old Place. She's still playing Carrie Evans. And he's Evans, too. Her brother. He's been sponging off her for years.
Oh, a very edifying specimen of humanity.
I'd better be getting back to Shoscombe, Prince. Not long to go now.
And Sir Robert's creditors, are they holding off?
Until the race is over. After all, it's in their interest. If the prince wins, they'll get their money back. So they'll be cheering him on with the rest of us.
Good luck to you all, Mr. Mason.
Thank you, Doctor.
Hey, you look like a man who knows what's what.
I beg your pardon?
What a tip.
A tip?
Yeah, it's a sure thing.
Look, just run along, will you?
Oh, it's a dessert. Come on, come on, it costs you a dinner.
Kindly leave me alone.
You can't lose. You can stake your warden pension on him.
Good Lord.
Is that you, Holmes? I thought you were with the Turkish ambassador.
I thought that my time might be better employed down here. I'm keeping a wary eye on Sir Robert, making sure that he plays the game.
How do you mean?
Well, 100 ways in which a man can influence the course of a race if he puts his mind to it. If by any chance Sir Robert does win this race, I want to be certain that he does so fairly and squarely. Hence, my discoy.
It certainly took me in. And what have you found out?
Oh, that Sir Robert is the soul of honour. To test him, I even ventured to put a little temptation in his way myself and suggested a few subtle ways by which the performance of some of his keenest rivals might be impaired.
And how did he react?
I was lucky to escape the fate he once handed out of Sam Brewer, the Norbiton horse whip.
The race is about to begin.
I must get rid of my little disguise. I'll see you after the race in the winner's enclosure.
Sir Robert, I could have wished for no other outcome. You won. You deserve to win.
I deserve nothing, Mr. Holmes. I was lucky to be able to run the horse at all.
And now, at last, you can be free of your creditors.
With £80,000 in my pocket, I shall be able to do better than that. And the first thing I shall do is to erect a suitable memorial to my dear sister.
You'll have to face an inquest before that, Sir Robert. But I trust I'll be able to persuade the police and the coroner to take a lenient view of the matter.
I cannot express my gratitude, Mr. Holmes.
And the worst you can expect will probably be a mild censure for delaying to register your sister's decease.
And that's considerably better than I deserve. Goodbye, Mr. Holmes. Goodbye, Doctor.
Goodbye, Sir Robert. And congratulations. It was a fine race.
Thank you, Doctor.
Norbiton. And now, Watson, I think we can take leave of these joyful scenes and return to the modest tranquility of 221B Baker Street.
Yes, of course. There is one little thing to be cleared up before we leave.
What is that?
I must collect my winnings.
In Shoscombe Old Place, Sherlock Holmes was played by Clive Medicine and Dr. Watson by Michael Williams, with Nicholas Leprevo as John Mason and Donald Pickering as Sir Robert Norbiton. Paul Freeman was played by Desmond Llewellyn, Josiah Barnes by Jonathan Adams, Stevens by George Parsons, Carrie by Susanna Corbett, Norlett by Jonathan Keeble, and the Gypsy by Becky Hindley. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The violinist was Leonard Friedman. Shoscombe Old Place was dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell and directed by Enid Williams.